Hi, I'm Zach, and you are listening to the Think Inclusive Podcast.
Recording from my office in beautiful Marietta, Georgia, you are listening to the Think Inclusive Podcast, episode 17. Today we have speaker, marathoner, and author of two books, Zachary Fennell. The first, Off Balanced, is a memoir about what it was like growing up and living with cerebral palsy, as well as Rock Realities, a compilation of 13 interviews he did with indie and alternative rock musicians. We discuss his most recent endeavor, completing a marathon, and all the challenges that came up for him being a person with cerebral palsy. After the podcast, please visit patreon.com/thinkinclusivepodcast, where you can support our goal to bring you in-depth interviews with inclusive education and community advocacy thought leaders. Also, you can help other people find us by giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the Think Inclusive Podcast. So, without further ado, here is the interview. All right, I'd like to welcome Zachary Fennell to the Think Inclusive Podcast. He is also known as the Cerebral Palsy Vigilante. He is a disability advocate who uses multiple platforms to send messages dispelling disability misconceptions and encourages everyone to examine the possible. He recently completed a marathon, and that is why I wanted to have Zach on to talk about his experience, his training, and I guess how that informs, you know, what we know about disability or disability rights. So thanks for being on the podcast, Zach.
My pleasure. I'm excited to be here.
Now, if you've been either a long-time reader or a long-time listener to Think Inclusive, you know that Zachary has been a contributor since practically the beginning of Think Inclusive. So Zach and I go way back, but this is the first time we've actually had a chance to record an interview. So I'm really excited about this, and we actually haven't caught up in a while. So why don't I ask you, Zach? So what have you been up to for the last 6 months to a year?
6 months to a year. let's see where to start. Obviously, since the summer, you mentioned the marathon. Since the early summer, I've been training heavily for that. Back May, I started working part time at the Beechwood Public at a local library as a page, and so I do that part time, and then keeping my purpose with my own blog. In addition to contributing to Think Inclusive's website, I have my own blog at ZacharyFennell.com, and a couple of recent honors. One was I was named among 100 of the, I'm trying to remember the exact title, was it like 100 best disability blogs by Stairlifts UK, and then recently also Health Unlocked. I was shortlisted out of the hundreds of blogs nominated. I was one of 30 shortlisted in the running for one of their Health Blogger Awards. And what is really neat about that was that it wasn't just cerebral palsy, which is the disability I focus on a lot, or just any disability. It was a health blogger thing, and not just blogging or disability blogs. So the two fields are very, have a lot of commonality, but at the same time, there is a lot of, when you open it up from disability health blogger, you are opening it up to a larger field, and to be even shortlisted among the blogs considered was an honor.
Wow, that's amazing. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Well, so it sounds like you've been pretty busy. So let's talk specifically about the marathon, because I know that that is something that you just finished, and that was last week.
Yes.
Correct. And you said, go ahead.
I was going to say, actually, at the time of us recording this podcast, I would have been in the final 2.5 miles on the way to the finish line. So the timing of it, there's like some parallel timing there.
Yeah. So you'd be in the home stretch.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about how you trained. And then after that, maybe just kind of the experience of running the marathon, because this isn't actually your first marathon. You did a half marathon previously. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. In 2016, the Towpath Marathon is the name of the event. 2016, they have a 10K, a half marathon, a marathon in October. And I did the half marathon last year, 13.1 miles. And then after I completed that, my friend who did the marathon with me this year challenged me. He's like, what are you going to do now? And I was just kind of like, well, my goal was to do the half, so I didn't really have like an answer. And he kept pushing me to do the marathon and encouraging me to do the marathon. I finally said, I'll do the marathon if you do it with me. And he's like, okay. So that's kind of like, you know, one day I got a text from him in the morning, early morning, showing me that he had registered for the Towpath Full Marathon. And I was like, okay, this is real now. And I got with my training and started with my training and moving forward with that.
That's so awesome. So if in case you don't know how hard it is to prepare for something like that, just for your body to be used to be in motion for that long, I had the privilege of running a half marathon in 2015, and trained. I mean, I trained, but yeah. It was definitely time consuming, and it just, you know, took a lot on, you know, a lot of wear and tear in your body, and but it was a great experience. So I want to hear from you, kind of, you know, what. And I guess what inspired you or what prompted you to even go down the road of doing these marathons from the half marathon to the full marathon?
All right, so it really all starts back in the spring of 2011. I was hanging out with a couple of friends weekly, and they were training for triathlon. And at the same time, I was reading a book, An Unlikely Story of Challenge and Triumph Over Cerebral Palsy, Someone Like Me, by John W. Quinn. And John has cerebral palsy like me, and he spent 20 years, he had to hide his CP from the Navy, but he spent 20 years in the Navy reaching the second highest rank, and reading his story really made me feel like, wow, I want to do something physically challenging. Like, just reading what John had wrote, and I just, like, how much of a physical challenge what he went through was, it motivated me to want to go to do something physically challenging. And the friend I was hanging with at the time, doing triathlon, I don't ride a bike, so my thought was, well, I'll do a marathon. And I asked, like, oh, how long's a marathon? They're like, 26.2 miles. So I'm like, well, I'll do a half a marathon, because in my mind it was unreasonable. Like, oh, that's a lot. I can't do a marathon. So I just, like, I'll do a half marathon. And fast forward a couple of years, and I really wasn't making too much progress on the goal. It was something I kept saying I was going to do, but didn't do. And then I did like a 1 mile. Those, Tim knows, and those of you who know me know I'm a huge Cleveland Indians fan. And they had an event at their Progressive Field, their home field, where the last mile was going through. Well, it was a 5K and then a 1 mile fun walk, and you end up on the field. And doing the 1 mile fun walk that year, this is 2014, that gave me that taste of what I needed to motivate myself to get serious about going after a half marathon. And I started training. It took me 2 years to get to the point where I can do the half marathon. Because when I first started training, the most I could do was 4 1/3 miles. And then I was just completely wiped out, completely exhausted. Mm-hmm. And when I hit, towards the end of that goal, a month before that half marathon, my friend James, who I did the marathon with, had me come in to speak to, he coaches cross country at a local high school. He had me come in to speak to them, give like a quick 5-minute pep talk. And afterwards, him and his other coaches were asking me what's next, and kind of hinted at this really. He's like, what's next? And I'm like, the goal is to half. It was still in my mind, I considered unreasonable to do a marathon. In my head, I was telling myself it's unreasonable to do a marathon. I have CP. I exert extra energy just to, with each step than usual. So I'm just going to get exhausted faster. I want to be able to do a marathon, but like I said, James kept persisting, and finally I said, I'll do it if you do it. And that led us to June of this year, 2017. And James had said, I did this. And then I'm like, okay. So he registers, and I'm like, okay, I have no excuses. I told him if he did it, I would do it. And so I started training. And the first thing I did in training was I just started getting out regularly, where I would, 3 times a week, I would be going out and walking about 6 miles just to get out, do six. Because after the half marathon, I kind of fell off my training, and I kind of, fell out of half marathon shape. So I had to really re-pick back up. And so I would do, 6 mile walks 3 times a week, and just to get my body used to, I guess, being tired, so that by the time I would do the actual full marathon and I'd get tired, instead of letting myself shut down, I'd be like, okay, I'm used to this. I can persevere through any fatigue I'm feeling. I started doing that, and at the same time, I started reaching out to anyone who had the marathon experience that I knew of, that I could get advice from them. John Quinn, the author of that book I mentioned, was somebody who had done a marathon, and so I reached out to him. I have a friend, Michael Manazzi, who's represented the United States in race walking, and so he's done a lot of long distances. So I asked him for advice. James had a friend, Sean, who's done marathons, and I asked them for advice about, okay, what do I need to do? What else do I need to do for training? What do I need to eat? Because that's one of the things to me that woke me up about training for a marathon. It isn't just putting on some miles and getting ready for endurance and building up your endurance. It really is a lifestyle change. You have to be eating more calories to be able to have the fuel in your body. You want to make sure that, you know, one of the pieces of advice they gave me was train when you're going to do the race. So if I'm, you know, I actually started the Towpath Marathon. Their course runs from, they have a walkers and runners registration. I registered to walk it, and I was, the walkers can start at 7, and then the course technically closes at 2. That's when their permit goes to, and then it, the course opens back up to the public.
Mm-hmm.
I had contacted Towpath saying that I thought it was going to take me longer than that, so if I could start at 5:30, if that would be possible, and they worked with me to set that up, and so I was training early morning to get out and just, you know, putting on, you know, I increased my miles from doing 6 to doing a, you know, basically doing a half marathon distance couple of times a week, and just continuing with increasing miles and building up endurance and basically simulating what the environment was going to be. Early on in my training, I used a cane to complete the marathon. Early on in my training, I knew that that might be an option, but I was going to train without it first just to make sure, you know, just to see if I could do it. You know, it's, in my mind, I worried that if I used my cane, that I'd be cheating myself out of some of the workout. And it just came, and I had to realize that when you're doing when you choose to do a marathon, you're not cheating yourself out of anything. That my legs are still getting the workout. The cane is just there to help me with my balance.
Right.
And so I, John was the one who told me, make sure you're, you know, it's like train the way, you know, train in what you're going to wear, train with what equipment you're going to use. So I started using the cane after a couple of months. Eventually I had a couple of falls as I was training, and I just decided that, you know, I noticed that, you know, they were coming, the falls were coming when I was hitting the 9-10 mile mark. So I kind of realized that it was just this level of exhaustion that I should really, I should take my cane and start training with my cane. And that's what I did, and just gradually, you know, increased the miles I was doing a number of times a week. And is there any more specifics about my training regimen that you would like me to go into?
Well, you kind of answered a few of the questions I had, like how many times a week did you train? So I think that was 3 times per week. And
yeah.
Then typically, I guess here's my question is, because of the CP, was there anything that you did, you know, that was different or unique than, you know, any other, I guess, how any other person would train? Like if you reached out to, you know, certain people and they said, well, you know, you should do this specifically because you have CP, or was there nothing like that?
There was a couple things. You know, one of the biggest obstacles, you mentioned this when you were talking about training for the half marathon, is it is really time consuming.
Mm.
And when I do, I basically was expecting to do 3 miles each hour, as is my pace. So to find the time to, continuing to increase my training, it was difficult to find the time. So I talked about how I started with doing 6 miles 3 times a week, and then I increased it to where I was doing a half marathon twice a week, and going from there. The last month of training, especially the latter 2 weeks, I was told that John was actually the one who told me, and Mike, my friend Mike, who Team USA race walker, kind of agreed with him that, if you can, you should be shooting to be able to do 20 miles before you do the marathon, because if you can do 20, you can do 26.2. And I started, I never actually got to that 20 because of finding the time to do it. I ended up eventually going back to doing 9-10 miles 3 times a week. And I just, again, it was a lot of it just due to finding that much time to train with, or to train.
Right.
And so I kind of knew, I kind of felt going in, I felt like my legs were strong enough. If I'm doing this consistently week after week, my legs feel strong. I felt strong that I was going to be able to do the marathon. Part of me, there was a little doubt because I've never actually done a marathon. So, mm-hmm. It's hard to know 100% for sure whether or not I'm ready, but I felt ready, and I just kind of so that was one aspect of the training where I didn't get exactly to where I was told to get. And a lot of the reason just dealt with finding the time and the fact that it involved, to train to that level, I would have had, or to train to that milestone of 20 miles, I would have had to find 7 hours worth of time to train, and around 7 hours of time to train. And I just, it was very, having a part-time, talking about earlier what I've been doing the previous 6 months and how busy I am, it was hard to find that time.
Right. Because how long did it take you to finish the marathon on Sunday?
It took me 11 hours, 11 hours, 40 minutes and 31 seconds. I went in there with an expectance of finishing in 8.5 hours. Obviously, that kind of was blown out of proportion. I basically was walking for nearly half a day, almost half a day,
right,
to complete it. But I think a lot of that, I think the 3 hour difference from what I expected and what I achieved it in, a lot of it dealt with just listening to my body. It was around the 10 mile mark, I started to feel like my right ankle started bothering me a little bit, and I stopped for a minute, cleared out, I had some debris getting in my shoe, so I cleared out my shoe, and then I worked my ankle a little bit with my hand, and then continued on. But I didn't try to overdo it. I respected what my body was telling me, and so I think that's where the difference in time of what I expected and what I did it in was.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we were seeing other people being carted off the course who were unable to finish because of injuries. So it's one of the things you just have to do is respect what your body was telling you.
Yeah.
I did end up finishing.
Now, did you have any? You talked about your cane, but is there anything in particular, any other unique gear that you had? I saw some of the Facebook videos that you posted, or that, or I guess the Facebook lives, where, so I saw some of the stuff that you were wearing, but was there anything that was unique about what you used?
One of the things that wouldn't be obvious from the Facebook Live videos is in my, and this is just from my regular day-to-day walking too, I have a half-inch leg discrepancy between my left leg is a half-inch longer than my right. So I have foot orthotics in my shoes to the in my right shoe it has like kind of a lift to compensate for that. So that's something I use on a daily basis when just walking. That was something that would have that was that I was using to kind of to help relieve the height discrepancy. But outside of that, I can't really think of anything that I used special that would have been that you wouldn't have been able to see in the video.
I also saw people cheering you on and calling you an inspiration, and just overall kind of sense. Were there people that knew that you were doing this, and were there for you specifically to cheer you on, or was it just people who saw you while you were in the race?
It's a combination. There was a combination. Actually, that day in our area paper, the Plain Dealer, they had the Metro columnist did a story on me, so about my training for the marathon, and that ran the day of the paper. So we had some passerbys who were like, I saw it in the paper this morning and knew about it, knew about me from that. And then there were friends I invited out to basically cheer me to the finish, because that was one of my things mentally was if I have people at the finish line waiting for me, it's going to be that extra motivation to get to the finish line instead of, giving in to whatever physical pain I might be feeling. And two of my friends who, as I had told family and friends to show up between 1:30 and 2, as I expected to finish between 2, around 2. But once a couple of friends of mine, once they got word that I was a lot farther behind than I had expected, they had actually, this is the permit I mentioned earlier, the permit towpath people had ended at 2 o'clock, so the Cuyahoga Valley National Park opened back up to the public, and a couple of friends I had, they decided, you know what, let's go find him. They knew I was around like the 19, I think they started walking towards our way. I was on the 19th or 20th mile, and so they had walked out with about 4 miles left. They had caught up with us, and they walked with James and I the final 4 miles, and those are two of the individuals seen in the Facebook Live video of my finish. So they had actually said they had showed up for me, and they made that decision, like, you know what, we're gonna walk out, we're gonna find Zach, and we're gonna, go the rest of the way with him. And that really made the, at that point, I knew like 4 miles left, I was getting it done, but it made the last 4 miles a lot funner than they would have been otherwise.
Yeah, I bet. that I wanted to ask you too, with people calling you an inspiration, certain disability, advocates and disability rights advocates are not comfortable with what they've done or their life being an inspiration, but I wanted to get your take on that as far as, how you feel about being called that.
It really, my, I used to have that mindset where it was just like, why am I, like, it's that attitude of, I set a goal and I want to complete my goal. Just because I have a disability doesn't make me an inspiration. And I understand that mindset. But what really took me back was it going back 3 years, I had, I have an aunt who lives out in Tucson, Arizona, or had an aunt who lives out in Tucson, Arizona, and she had been diagnosed with leukemia and given 2 months to live, and she had always been one of my biggest supporters. So I went out there to with my uncle, her brother, to visit her and just be there to be support for her. And one night, me and her, we were having a conversation, and she called me, and I mentioned that she basically called me an inspiration, and I called her an inspiration. I called her an inspiration because she wasn't letting, despite the bad hand that she was dealt with her leukemia, and she didn't let that change who she was, and she kept fighting. And to me, that was inspiring. She called me an inspiration. It was just like in the dialogue, it was just kind of like, well, I don't consider myself an inspiration. She didn't consider herself an inspiration. But so, and that's where I kind of realized, that isn't the idea, or being inspiration really is the eye of the beholder if you're inspirational. My whole thing with, I would ask is, if someone says you're inspiration, is it just blind compliment because you have a disability? Or what, no, my question always is, what makes me an inspiration to you? So it's kind of like, I'm okay with being called an inspiration for, especially for doing the marathon. If, there was I had one biker who passed us after the course opened back up to the public. And then she wrote me later on. She got my name off the results page and found my website. And she wrote me later on to tell me that she at first thought I was like an injured runner. And then when she was at the point where the finish line was, and she ended up talking with my mother, who both my parents were there to also support me, and talking to my mother, she found out I had cerebral palsy, and I was doing the marathon. She had done four marathons herself before. She said, as a perfectly, able-bodied person, I know how difficult it is to do a marathon. So so she found me inspirational for the reason of even trying to attempt what I even once considered unreasonable for myself. So that, having, and I'm okay with that. I think that's great. So I think it really, my opinion on the inspirational comment really weighs in is asking, well, why do you say that? Are you, I think sometimes people mistake in like certain situations, people might mistake inspirational for just like in awe. And I know this is works. I don't know if this works in all disability situations, but I know it relates to the marathon situation because I know I had a couple of individuals where I work make mention to me that this past week that like I could have never done that. You inspire me. I could have never done that. I would be done after 2 miles or 3 miles. And it, in my mind, it's like, that's not really inspiring you then. That puts you in awe of what I've done, but you're not inspired to go out and do something. Like, you know, you're not necessarily going out there to improve yourself, which I think is a part of what inspirational is. It's it's being that motivation to go tackle something yourself.
Yeah, that's, I like that perspective. You know, not being content with just being called an inspiration, but really digging in and finding out what that means to that person. And also the idea of that something that you have done can spur on action, you know, for another person. So, you know, I look at your life and that makes me want to do something, and causes me to do something. So, yeah, I like that perspective. So I have a couple more questions. When you were running, when you were in the race, the marathon, did you feel like the marathon was accessible to you, as in, like, you said that you contacted them beforehand and saying, hey, I'd really like to, you know, it's going to take me a long time to finish. Can I have an earlier start time? Did you feel like they were accommodating? And was there anything else about the race that you felt like they made an accommodation for you for?
The towpath race itself, like, the course is pretty flat, which is really nice, and a big reason why when James was like, what marathon are we going to do, I said the towpath because I knew it was pretty flat and it would be accessible. And they were very very accommodating. The person who responded to my initial email, she actually had from talking with her and arranging everything, I came to know that she had a nephew who passed away who had cerebral palsy. So I don't know if that helped at all to make her more understanding of what I was going through, or, you know, kind of like more understanding of my situation. But they were very accommodating. I know that's not always the case when someone asks for accommodations, you know, and that's one of the things, like, one of the fears you kind of have sometimes, you trick yourself into thinking, it's like, well, I don't want to be in the way, and it's just like, you know, that, you know, just, it's all about, you know, inclusion. John Quinn, going back to him for a second, he has a great definition for inclusion, and that is having the opportunity to complete something. So it's like, give me the same opportunity to do it. And it, for me, it was just time. And they were very accommodating with their attitude. And in general, I have found that, I mean, I kept a group of people who were working the marathon 3 hours past what they normally would have been there for, because they were waiting for me to finish and see this thing through. And so I think during the middle of the race, there might have been some who were like waiting for me to drop out, but
yeah,
because I remember it was like around the 16-mile mark, there's an aid station, Gatorade water, and whoever was working that station, after I drank in the water and the Gatorade, I was like, keep going this way, and pointed to the direction. He goes, he was just kind of surprised. He's like, you're continuing on? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, you go that way. So I think there was some surprise individuals that I think they were waiting for that point where I would drop out, but no, I don't, but it was never kind of like I might have been oblivious to it, but I never felt like that was pushed on me, like, really, you're continuing on? Like, I never was pushed on me. They gave me that opportunity to finish, and they were accommodating. I think some of it might have gone to the contact I had was Kathy, and I think some of it went to her own history with cerebral palsy, having a nephew who had cerebral palsy. So they were very, the course is accessible. It's a great course in that fashion. You know, there's, it's in a park, so there are some issues like, you know, I did fall twice in mile 3 and mile 15. In mile 3, I had tripped over, there's like a monkey ball that had fallen from a tree or whatever, and that I had like, I stepped on and I slipped and went down to my knees, but it was like, you know, that's something I could have, well, it's just, it was like some, like, it's impossible. I think it would be impossible to expect them to clear every debris,
right,
all the debris from the course. So
right.
I felt like they were reasonably accommodating, they were very accommodating in both, you know, the actual course and then their attitudes towards me.
That's great. That's really good. So I'm going to ask you probably what a lot of people have asked you. So you've run your marathon. So what is next in for Zachary Fennell?
There's, you know, a lot next. There's a lot to do. I know with the marathon itself, I honestly would like to get the marathon, my finish time under 10 hours. So I'm going to, James and I are talking about going back and doing the towpath again next year. And I would like to, as far as races go and, you know, that aspect, I would like to get my marathon down under 10 hours. So working on increasing my pace and, you know, continuing training to do that, that's definitely in the, you know, that's something I plan to do. I think from the response I have received all week from the marathon, I'm also thinking about putting together, or I'm actually in the works of putting, I'm going to, no release date or yet, but I would like to put together a memoir, my second memoir, that kind of details that marathon journey for me, and kind of with, you know, I share my story with the hopes of, I don't share to brag. I share because in hopes of exactly what I talked about as far as, you know, inspiring and, you know, hoping others see what they might at once considered unreasonable, attack it and go to work at it, and then achieve what they once maybe thought was impossible for them.
That's fantastic. Good luck with the other memoir.
And I will also be contributing to Think Inclusive in the future as well.
That's
my training kind of, you know, took me away there for a second, but for some, but yeah, you can definitely expect to see my contributions to Think Inclusive in the future as well.
Oh, that's good news for us. I also want to mention to everyone that's listening that Zachary has his first memoir, Off Balanced, and you can find that on, I know you can find that on Amazon. Can they find it on your website too?
Yeah, I have all the information on my website, so they could get all the details of where they can find it on my website.
Okay. And did you want to plug anything else? I know, do you have a Facebook page and and Twitter?
Yeah. If, you know, basically, if you want to get in touch with me, you can do so on Twitter at Zachary Fennell. It's Fennell, my last name, F-E-N-E-L-L. And then Zachary's Zachary. So ZACHARYFENELL. And then my Facebook page is facebook.com/author Zachary Fennell. So AUTHOR, and then my name. And you'll find me there. And yeah, I'm always, one of the most rewarding things is getting feedback from individuals. I also have a YouTube channel that is youtube.com/my name, Zachary Fennell. So that would be, and, you know, I put together a YouTube video every week. So that'd be something to, something else to check out online. But like I said, I always enjoy getting feedback from viewers, readers, whatever descriptor you fit in. So just having a conversation. So feel free to reach out to me on Facebook, Twitter. Check out my YouTube channel.
All right. Zachary Fennell, thank you for being on the Think Inclusive podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That is our show. We would like to thank speaker and author Zachary Fennell. Make sure you check out his website, zacharyfennell.com, and you can find him on Facebook and Twitter. Follow Think Inclusive on the web at thinkinclusive.us, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and Instagram. Today's show was produced by myself talking into USB headphones, a Zoom H1 handy recorder, MacBook Pro, GarageBand, and a Skype account. You can also subscribe to the Think Inclusive podcast via Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or Podomatic.com, the largest community of independent podcasters on the planet. From Marietta, Georgia, please join us again on the Think Inclusive podcast. Thanks for your time and attention.